Good morning, everyone. My name is Renee. If we haven't met or if you're new, welcome. I'm one of the pastors here on staff at the Vineyard. I pastor our Chicago City campus, belovedly called The Neighborhood, and it's good to see you this morning. So this morning, we are talking about walking through loneliness. The world is a lonely place, and we are lonely people. More than half of us in this room feel lonely. Most of us feel lonely in some part of our life. And if you currently don't feel lonely, chances are you've recently been lonely and you're gonna be lonely again. Loneliness exists in all shapes and sizes, in all places, for all people. We feel lonely at work and in our home, in our marriages, in our parenting, in our work relationships. We are lonely at church, at school, and in our neighborhoods. We are lonely in our bodies, in our brains, and in our souls. We are lonely in pain and in celebration, when there is peace and when there is conflict. We are lonely remembering our past, standing in our present, and anticipating our future. We are a lonely people. Where are you currently lonely? Even when we can agree that loneliness is this universal, expected, almost even normal life experience, most often loneliness is a secret. Most of us will never actually say, "I'm lonely." Instead, we'll wait it out, we'll hold our breath, we'll ignore it, we'll accept it, and when we're absolutely, truly, completely desperate, we will Google it. Sounds perfectly normal and terribly miserable. But loneliness confuses us. It sticks to us. It traps us. And loneliness grows very quickly. It's like a vine that you see on the side of a house. You know, at the beginning, you see it beginning to grow, and you think, oh, that's actually kind of pretty. Green adds something. You don't think anything of it. When I have an extra hour, I'll go and take care of it. But if left unattended, if ignored for too long, that vine will eventually swallow your house and in the process start to eat away at what holds your house strong. Loneliness is the same way. When it goes unattended, it can swallow your life and begin to eat away at the things that keep you steady. So what do we do? Loneliness is so disorienting, so discouraging, that we have to consider, what are we supposed to do when we feel lonely? We have to have a plan. You know, as you know, I'm a former first grade teacher, and in my work as a teacher and as a pastor, and I'm the parent of young children, one of my responsibilities to the kids around me is to teach them what to do should they ever get lost. Now, I don't want to lose them. They don't want to be lost, but people get separated, especially on a field trip or heading off to a new place, or if you have any measure of curiosity, it is very easy to be separated. And so one of my roles as a teacher and pastor and parent is to help my kids and the kids around me think through, what do you do if you are to ever be lost? And we have to do the same practice as followers of Jesus. What do we do should we ever feel lonely? God doesn't want you to feel lonely. You've been created for connection. connection with him and connection with each other. In fact, all throughout the Bible, one of God's echoes is, I will be with you and you belong to each other. He says it to all sorts of people in all sorts of places. I am with you, says the Lord. You belong to each other. So if that is true, if God doesn't want you to be lonely, if you don't want to be lonely, then what do we do when we're standing in front of loneliness? You know, one of the first things we teach kids about being lost? You may have very different variations of this in your classrooms or your groups of kids or your families, but one of the most powerful things we can teach our kids when they get lost is when they realize that they're too far away, when they realize that they've been separated in the grocery store, at the park, or at the beach, when they begin to not kind of recognize what's around them, we teach them to do this thing. Stop and say out loud, I'm lost. Stop their feet. And we teach them to say out loud, I'm lost. Even if no one can hear them, even if they don't say it very loud, when you teach a kid to stop, it keeps them from wandering even further. And when you teach them to say, I'm lost, it cues all the things we've ever talked about what to do when you're lost. All those good skills come back to mind. All of a sudden, they know the other things. They know what to do. They're prepared for being lost. And the same thing happens in loneliness. If you can stop and say, I'm lonely, it orients you. It helps you look for what you need. It helps you remember all the things that you need to get your way back to being connected to God and connected to other people. So since most of us are not brave enough to do this alone, we're going to practice together. When on the count of three, we're going to say as a group, I'm lonely. You ready? One, two, three. I'm lonely. It's powerful. It's powerful to hear it in your own voice. I don't need to know the circumstances of your loneliness. I have mine, you have yours. We all have some version of this, but it's incredibly powerful when we're able to stop and say in our own voice, I'm lonely. And we see David do this in Psalm 25, 16. This is how he says it. He says, turn to me, Lord, and have pity on me. Turn to me and be gracious to me is what it says on the screen. For I am lonely and afflicted. I am lonely, Lord. Do you see me, Lord? One of the other versions says, turn to me and have pity on me, for I am lonely and oppressed. Relieve my trouble and bring me out of my distress. Bring me out of my distress. Now, I don't know about you, but I would rather God dissolve my loneliness. I would rather God snap his fingers and provide the perfect companion, laser beam the lies that loneliness feeds off of. I want God to say one word that will change the thing that keeps me isolated. But Jesus brings me out of my distress. He leads me out of my distress. He walks me out of my distress. What's true, church, is that Jesus walks us through loneliness. Loneliness is not the absence of Jesus. And Jesus' presence does not always make loneliness go away. I'll say that again because we often get hooked there. Loneliness is not the absence of Jesus. And Jesus' presence does not always make all loneliness go away. Instead, Jesus walks us through loneliness. And the part of that that is so encouraging to me is that he not only desires to walk me through it, but he's a very good guide because Jesus has experienced loneliness. Have you ever considered that? The one who's offering to bring you through it is the one who has been brought through it. I want to follow that guy. The one who walks us out of our loneliness is the one who has been lonely, fully God and fully human at the same time, means that Jesus understands loneliness. Tempted in the desert by Satan, standing in front of groups and groups of people that didn't understand him, crying out to God in the Garden of Gethsemane, hanging on a cross, Jesus has been lonely. Your loneliness is not unknown or unfamiliar to Jesus. And there are three things that Jesus demonstrates in his walking through loneliness and in his teaching to his disciples and to the other people. Three things that kind of keep us from getting swept by the undertow of loneliness. Three things that keep us from being sucked up by loneliness. Three things that allow us to follow Jesus out of loneliness, rather than being stuck or trapped by it. And the first thing that Jesus gives and demonstrates with his life is truth. Loneliness tells lie after lie after lie. No one sees you, no one cares about you, no one notices you. And when you begin to believe the lies of loneliness, loneliness grows wide and deep in and around you. And it will begin to suffocate your presence and your voice in the world. When I first moved with my husband to his home country, I didn't speak any Spanish. And they spoke Spanish. And I didn't. And I am over-enthusiastic, always optimist, convinced I can figure most things out. Well, language learning is no joke. So the allure and the fun adrenaline of that adventure wore off at about day six. Because all of a sudden, I was in a country where no one except my husband and a few of his friends could understand me. I lost my ability to communicate. I lost my ability to make friends by myself. I lost my ability to be funny. I lost my ability to advocate for myself the way I wanted to. I lost my ability to communicate what I needed when I needed. And do you know, my friends, that is the perfect soil for loneliness to grow. I'm sure many of you have had that experience moving to the United States. And so for 6 months, my voice in English and in Spanish got quieter and quieter, softer and softer, and more unfamiliar, until one day a friend came to visit and said, "You don't sound like you, not even in English." Loneliness was winning. The lies of loneliness were suffocating my voice. And do you know that the greatest antidote to the lies of loneliness is truth? 100%, without a doubt, truth. So if you are being swallowed up by the lies of loneliness, my question would be, where's the truth? Are you close to truth? Are you far away from truth? Is there any truth in your heart and in your mind? And let's be very clear here, because truth is even getting foggy these days. You don't need your truth in this situation. You need the truth. I know. This is like a big thing. I've got a thing about magnets that look like scripture but are not scripture, okay? We gotta be good at this. Come on. You know, the thing that Jesus said to Satan in the desert, I was thinking about this week, the thing that Jesus said to Satan in the desert, every time Satan was like talking to him, trying to tempt him, trying to tease him, you know, everything that Jesus said to Satan back to him started with, "For it is written." For it is written. Do you know the only way you know what is written? You have to read it. Right? You have to read it. And Jesus could say, "For it is written," because he had read it. Or you have to listen to it. Listen to the Bible on audio. If you're not a reader, if you've got a long commute, or if reading's not your thing, listen to it. Drown yourself in truth. Inhale it. Soak it up. For it is written. What is written about you? What is written about God? What is written about the world? What is written about loneliness? Drink it up. You're thirsty. Speak it over one another. You know, I've been annoying my friends with a new game I've invented. It's called Here's What's True. Okay? If you and I have hung out recently, or if we're going to hang out, we're going to play this game. So I think the truth is getting too foggy in the world. And at least for me, it's getting too foggy in my brain. So I am committed to speaking the truth, to being around the truth, and to spreading the truth. Okay? So anytime I'm with a friend and we're talking about a situation, or we're debriefing, which is a nice way of saying gossiping. Or, you know, if we're just going back and forth or we're complaining or whatever, I'm now landing all conversations in my new game called Here's What's True. And here's how you play. You stop the conversation at the end, and the first person, that's you because I'm teaching you how to play the game, you say, "So what's true?" And one person goes. And you just start with a true statement. God sees us. And then the next person goes. God cares about this. And then the next person goes, "I could be wrong." And then the next person goes, "Maybe I've got some apologizing to do." And then the next person goes, "God has a plan." And then the next person goes, "God, this is more important to God than it is to me." And you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and you land at truth. It is my little way of speaking truth over the people I spend time with and over myself. It's a goofy game. You can play it. You can play it with your kids. You can play it at the dinner table. You can play it with a friend. Play it with a coworker. Tell them a hokey pastor taught it to you. We have to land in truth. And the minute we begin to feel lonely, isolation begins to flirt with us. When we start to feel lonely, it's very ironic. We start to pull away from people. We start to not show up. All of a sudden, we don't respond. And when isolation begins to win, all of a sudden, we look at our friends, our family, our coworkers, the people in our neighborhood, the people in our small group, incredibly critically. So we start to think like, "You know, I didn't really like them anyways. They're not my people. They disagree with me. You know, so-and-so always annoyed me." Isolation is a place where loneliness grows. Grows and grows and grows and grows. Loneliness feeds off of isolation. And what's true, playing my own game here, what's true is that Jesus spent time, all the time, with his people. He had the 12 disciples. They traveled together. They worked together. They had conflict together. They ate meals together, all of it. And anytime Jesus sent his disciples out, he sent them out in small groups. Jesus' life demonstrated a life that is connected to other people. I think that Jesus had an affinity for many of his disciples, but I'm convinced that a lot of his disciples annoyed him. A lot of his disciples were not a good fit. A lot of his disciples were probably like not his preferred people. Whatever, they're who he had, and they were faithful. So look around you, for real. Look around you. Like turn your body. Okay. You, my friends, if you've been here one time or you've been here 1,000 times, you are a part of this room. And this room is a representation that God has given you the gift of other people. You do not have to like all of us. You do not have to prefer all of us. But we are a representation that God has made you as a part of a body, a part of a community, a part of a church, a part of a world. You belong. So find your people somewhere in this room, or find somebody somewhere in the world. Do not let isolation win. Jesus' instruction to the disciples that were around him or he sent out were care for one another, pray for one another, consider one another, do life together. Loneliness pulls us us towards isolation, and Jesus pulls us towards each other all the time. And so you have to pay attention. Where are you being pulled? Are you being pulled towards isolation, or are you being pulled towards other people? Several years ago, one of my kids screamed for a year. I don't know if you've ever had a baby like that, but that's hard. She needed me every moment of every day. She was very cute, but it was terrible. We tried everything, and she was miserable for a year. And I was miserable. Our whole family was miserable for a year. So I didn't go to much of anything that year, okay? And anytime I could go to something, I was way too tired to even go to something. Like, I just wanted to be by myself, okay? If I could manage to get away, I wanted to be by myself. And the one thing we could manage to do was to come to church on Sunday mornings. And I'm not kidding you. I think this might be an Evanston Vineyard record. We got paged every Sunday for a year. Family 089, right here. Yeah, the section in the back knew my number. Every time. Steve would get up here and say, here we go. And I'd be like, whoop, Renee's needed in the nursery. Every single week for a year, we got paged. I listened to a whole lot of sermons standing at that window. And one time in that year, someone invited me to something. And before she could even finish her sentence, I said, oh, no, thanks, I can't come. She said, why not? I said, well, you know, I got this kid. And she said, bring her. And I burst out laughing because I was like, oh, do you really want to like ruin your thing? Because this will ruin it. And I said, I don't think you want to. I said, oh, I'm not going to bring her. She's going to cry the whole time, guaranteed. And she said, the woman says, who cares? At least we'll get to see each other. Yeah, it was powerful. So this gives me really choked up. So I went, and my baby screamed the whole time, and I saw other human beings. You know what? That invite sustained my year. And so I just started to bring my screaming baby to everything. I am so sorry if we ever ruined any of your events. Our family made it. So I don't care. I don't care. Because you know what? I'm not going to let isolation win. You cannot let isolation win. Just bring it with you. Let Jesus dissolve it. Let Jesus fix it. Let the community of God be the community of God. You staying away doesn't work. Don't stay away. Bring the thing that keeps you. You know, loneliness is exhausting. Loneliness is exhausting. If you have ever been lonely, if you are currently lonely, it is exhausting. Despair will grow quickly, and you will often crave escape. Anything that will numb, bring peace, offer relief, or offer temporary escape from your pain. And so we do all sorts of weird things as a way to escape the reality of loneliness or the exhaustion of loneliness. We eat, we shop, we scroll the internet, we sleep, we work, we game, we fill in the blank. Now, none of these things are inherently bad. But when we use them to escape loneliness, they become broken. None of those things, shopping, scrolling the internet, eating, sleeping, working, gaming, none of those things are inherently bad. But we use them in broken ways when loneliness has swallowed up our lives. We will drown our days with anything that will keep us from thinking just how lonely we are. But if we are going to follow Jesus through loneliness, we have to stay connected to him. The path through loneliness is going to take a whole lot of dips and turns, and if we do not stay close to the one we are following, we will lose our way. And all throughout the Gospels, Jesus went to somewhere to pray. All throughout the Gospels, when things were good, when things were hard, Jesus made sure he stayed connected to God the Father. And the Gospels ironically say Jesus often would go to a lonely place to pray. A lonely place. Luke 5:16, Jesus would go to a lonely place and pray. Now, a lonely place. We don't know that Jesus felt lonely in this space. Probably it was just a space away from other people, but the word is not lost on me. A lonely place can be a place where you find Jesus. A lonely place can be the place where we reach the one we're following. And so in our loneliness, we have to intentionally stay connected to Jesus. It's one thing to follow him like a tour guide, but it's another thing to be tethered to him. To link arms with him, to walk in step with him, because loneliness will confuse and disorient us. Loneliness will feed lies. It will keep us isolated. Loneliness will pull us further and further away from our Creator. And so my question is, are you staying connected to God in the midst of your loneliness? What if your loneliest place was a place you found Jesus? What if you found Jesus in that place where you are currently lonely? I don't sleep very well. I haven't slept very well for a long time. And in fact, I don't think I slept most of 2016. My husband says that was the year Renee was awake. I was just awake. And I was awake for lots of reasons, but one of it was a really severe chronic pain due to a terrible pregnancy. And I just had shooting pain through my body all the time. And it was really hard. Pain is incredibly isolating. Pain will make you disoriented. Pain will confuse you. Pain will distort the truth. And so when I was awake in the middle of the night in 2016, I would read, I would watch TV, I would eat, I would walk our apartment, and I would scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll the internet. And I did anything I could to keep myself from thinking about how I was awake and the whole world was asleep. Because if you don't sleep, you believe that you are the only one in the world that is awake. I know that is impossible, but that's what sleeplessness does to people. And so one night in 2016, I was on like day four of no sleep. And I was pacing and pacing and pacing, and I just had it. My body was radiating in pain. I was so disoriented. It was very, very difficult, and I let God have it. I mean, have it. Not the nice version, the mean version. You know, you don't see me. You don't care about this. You don't care about my body. Blah, 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 blah. And when I was finally out of breath, when my heart and my head was empty, I heard God say, I see you, I hear you, I'm right here. And then a whole bunch of other reassuring things. It was one of the most holy moments in my life, and it happened in my loneliness, in the middle of the night. And you know what? I still didn't sleep. My pain did not go away for another 6 months. But it changed how I understood the space of that loneliness. It changed how I understood sleeplessness. It changed how I experienced that isolation, how I fought those lies, how I stayed tethered to Jesus. What if the loneliest places were the places where you heard the voice of God and saw the face of the Father? The band can start making their way back up. I was still so very tired that year. But being awake began to feel different. I was lonely and Jesus was there. So where are you currently lonely? In your loneliness, whatever it looks like, what is louder? Lies or the truth? Where are you leaning? Towards isolation or each other? How well are you connected to Jesus? Are you holding steady or is it shaky? What's true is that the world is a lonely place and we are lonely people. So we have to be prepared for loneliness. We're going to stand and sing one last song together. And in that song, I would encourage you to use the space to talk to Jesus about the place where you're currently lonely. The places where your heart and your mind are being swallowed up by loneliness. Ask him to meet you right there in that place. So let's stand and sing one last song.